Hello, my dear friends. My God, there's so much to talk about today. I don't have time to talk about it all. So many amazing things. The UFO hacker isn't getting extradited from the UK. I don't know if you guys knew about this, but this autistic hacker in the UK 10 years ago had been listening to some stuff from the Disclosure Project, which is a UFO project where they get generals and all the various high-ranking officials who claim to have had experiences with UFOs, and they all get them together to talk about what they've seen. And one of these people was a lady who apparently worked at some NASA building called Building Number 8, where the entire purpose of the building is using Photoshop to blot out pictures of UFOs that get picked up by satellites. Whatever, it's crazy UFO shit. But this guy hacked in to Building 8 and claims to have actually seen pictures of UFOs. Anyway, what's really fascinating about this is that that little tidbit of information is not what's being covered in all the various news stories that are erupting in the media today. Everyone's just talking about the fact that he didn't get extradited from the UK because he was autistic and depressed, and they thought that if he went to a United States prison, he would end up killing himself. It seems to be like 3 or 4 points down, if it's even mentioned in a news story, that the guy was hacking to try to find proof that there are that we're using advanced alien technologies in some of our war machines, and that there is already existing the ability to harvest unlimited power from the universe, but this is being kept away from us by the dark reptilian overlords that are ruling our planet at the time. Now, whether or not that stuff is true, I don't know. But what's super awesome is that that guy managed to stick his technological proboscis into a part of the hornet's nest that caused the motherfuckers to swarm on him, which seems to lend some credibility to the fact that he might have stumbled upon something that he wasn't supposed to get to. On the other hand, if the reptilian overlords have managed to obtain super high-tech alien technology that allows us to harness or harvest unlimited energy from the universe, you would also think that they would know to password protect the computers that have direct proof that we are currently surrounded by fleets of alien spaceships that are trying to control our society and our minds. So, who knows? Regardless, that's caught my attention and it's incredible. So, I'll put a link on the website on the on the section of this podcast to information about this guy. He seems really cool. I'd actually like to have him on the podcast, but his mom is the only person doing interviews right now, unfortunately. Here's another thing. I want to apologize to all the Burning Man people for the various rants and tirades I may have gone on making fun of Burning Man. I went to a Burning Man decompression party in downtown Los Angeles with my pal DJ Doug Pound this weekend, and it was a fucking blast. It was so much fun. So cool. Endless DJ stages that are constructed to look like sort of Conan the Destroyer pagan altars with bull horns and kind of vague bovine features upon which are dancing super hot girls spinning LED hula hoops while giant gouts of fire erupt from the horns to pretty awesome music. This shit is amazing. All you Burning Man discreditors out there can kiss my ass. I'm going to Burning Man this year. I'm going to the Playa. I want to come into your camps. Please invite me into your camps. I want to go to your absinthe bar. I want to wear stilts. I want to wear glowing fox hoods. I want to lay in inflatable bubble tents surrounded by dusty lesbians making out to hardcore psychedelic trance music while I snort DMT. I'm in. I'm coming. I'm going there. I can't wait. I'm very excited about it. Please, please invite me into your camps, but do me a favor out there. Please don't invite me to your goddamn shit fucking hipster bars that are sausage parties surrounded by greasy dudes with handlebar mustaches who think they're important because they just found a rare Cole Porter album. And somehow the discovery of this album has filled them with a level of confidence that hasn't been experienced by a human being since Hemingway took down a charging bull elephant. You're not interesting. Please don't invite me to those parties. I think you're wonderful. I think you're fantastic, but I don't want to go to the awful, awful place, that thing that happens when the gestalt consists of a series of pixels that have within their core a sucking insecurity. that is a direct result of the deep knowing that just because you have a well-groomed handlebar mustache and vintage suspenders does not make you a man or interesting or anything more than a kind of whiny neo-jock. It appears that in human society, there must always be a structure of testosterone-soaked dipshits who have created a hierarchical system through which they can get laid. But weirdly, what's happened is the attitude of the jock has gone from existing inside of like muscular people who are now eating mushrooms and practicing martial arts and have somehow defeated their ego, and it is possessed these skinny, weird, frail, angry dudes that conglomerate at disgusting backwoods dive bars and mule about smoking their weird cigarettes and drinking their shit drinks and acting like the biggest assholes on earth. No thanks. Not interested. I want to go to the playa, bro. I want to go to the playa. I want to bungee jump from your pirate ship. I want to go to your seminar on finding animal spirits inside your pockets. I want to go to the playa. I do not want to go to your goddamn bar party. I want to go to Burning Man. I want to dance beneath the playa sky and experience the radiant sense of universal unity that comes from blending one's consciousness with a group of people who are all attempting to emulate the transcendent love force that is inside all things. I do not want to go to a bar party. I want to go to the playa. And you cannot judge Burning Man, and you cannot look down your nose at Burning Man if you like hanging out at dive bars and think your IMDb star meter rating is important. Now a reading from the Bhagavad Gita. This is from chapter 7, verse 8. Arjuna, I am the taste of pure water and the radiance of the sun and moon. I am the sacred word and the sound heard in air and the courage of human beings. I am the sweet fragrance in the earth and the radiance of fire. I am not a greasy hipster at a shit bar. When I meet someone new, I do not immediately start talking about my farts. I am strength, free from passion and selfish attachment. I am desire itself, if that desire is in harmony with the purpose of life. Don't you get the feeling that last sentence there? I am if that desire is in harmony with the purpose of life. It got added in later by someone who was scared of blowjobs. I am desire itself if that desire is in harmony with the purpose of life. Not that blowjobs aren't in harmony with the purpose of life, but that does feel like an add-on that a square smacked in there, because if Krishna just says, I am desire itself, well then that like kind of throws your ability as a priest to control people right out the fucking window, doesn't it? If your desire is the incarnation of God. Woo! That's some hardcore shit. Think about that for a second. Really embrace the idea that your desire for whatever the thing is that you happen to want is a manifestation of the internal superintelligence of the universe coursing through you like electricity through a circuit board, guiding you in the direction of your dreams and of paradise. That's beautiful. This whole thing that is desire that is in harmony with the purpose of life, they gotta add that in there, because they're afraid that if the wrong person hears that, they're going to go on a fuck rampage. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is brought to you by Shore Design T-Shirts. Shore Design T-Shirts is a T-shirt company that is located in a crater in Thailand. The crater is a result of the various experiments that the original Shore Design T-Shirt company was doing with a small-scale particle accelerator. They were actually trying to make atoms. They were trying to shatter atoms so that they could weave the shattered atoms together to make a softer t-shirt than the t-shirts that they are already selling, which have been described as the feeling that you would feel if you got sucked into the bottom of a black hole. As you know, if you took rudimentary science, you know that at the bottom of every black hole, there is a very comfortable trampoline thing, a beautiful, bouncy, spongy thing where all the spirits of those who have died spend eternity dancing and bouncing around. It's a blast. It's like one of those inflatable kitty houses for dead people. It's fun. But if you've ever used a Ouija board and you've contacted one of these people, they'll immediately start raving about how soft everything is at the bottom of a black hole. Well, Shore Design T-Shirts sends interstellar probes into the depths of black holes to pluck this fabric from the black holes, fly out of the singularity, and back into their super advanced laboratories where black hole chunks are woven together by forest witches to create the T-shirts that we call Shore Design T-shirts. These fucking things are so soft, and the designs are so beautiful, that when someone sets eyes on your beautiful Shore Design T-shirt, there is a high probability that they will implode with desire and suck the entire planet into a new black hole. This is one of the dangers of Shore Design T-shirts existing at all, and it's why they have to be located in Thailand rather than in the United States, because there is a risk that in distributing shirts this soft, that they could punch a hole into the universe and everything that we know could get sucked into a infinite trampoline dimension. So go check out their website, shoredesignt-shirts.com. If you put my name in, you will get 10% off of these beautiful shirts. Do go check them out. Wear them to my shows. Speaking of my shows, I'm going to be in Chicago coming up this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the Windy City. I will be there at Zany's on the 19th, the 20th, and the 21st in Chicago. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, one show Sunday. Please come to that. And also, starting November 4th through the 8th, I'm going to be in Austin, Dallas, Houston, in New Orleans. And then on the 20th and 21st, I'm going to be in Portland and Seattle. I'm also going to Montreal with Joe Rogan on the 16th of November. So I'm doing a lot of shows coming up, and it would really make me happy if you guys would come out and say hello and give me a hug, kiss me lightly on the neck, and pierce my ears, whatever. Do some piercings. Let's pierce each other on this tour. So go check out my website, DuncanTrussell.com. All the dates are listed there. Also, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour is sponsored by Audible.com. Audible.com has an exciting announcement to make. They just got the Lord of the Rings trilogy audiobook. They just put out the Lord of the Rings audiobook. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, so I don't know how the narrator is, but he better be good, because those are sacred words, and they're an amazing series. Still, in my mind, and I know this is a controversial point, but I don't think they're quite as good as the Dark Tower series. God, I know, I just said it. I mean it. I love the Dark Tower series, at least the first three books. But anyway, they're great. You really do feel like Tolkien was like an interdimensional traveler who was actually coming back from Middle Earth and relating his experiences there, because he's so detailed and he's so good at making a fantasy universe seem real and beautiful and juicy and awesome. So anyway, if you go to audibletrial.com/family hour and sign up for a trial membership, you can download an audiobook for free. And then you could cancel your trial membership and you still get to keep that audiobook, which is pretty awesome. So if you want to listen to The Lord of the Rings or any of the other zillions of awesome Audible audiobooks out there, go sign up. We get $15 when you do that. Also, finally, a gigantic thank you to all of you who have donated lately to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. We are about to get a whole new batch of posters in the shop. We had a poster contest, and a lot of artists from the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Forum made some beautiful works of art and then voted on it. So they're being delivered now, and next week I'm going to sign them, and we're going to put them in the shop, and there's going to be a lot of posters there, and we've got new t-shirts that are coming in. A lot of new stuff is coming into the shop. But I'm blown away by those of you who have been choosing to support the podcast by donating money to us. Thank you. And thank you to all of you who have been listening, and thank you to all of you who have been sending me awesome stuff at the P.O. Box or have been sending me really cool emails. I'm sorry if I haven't responded to all of you. I got a huge influx of the sweetest emails on earth after the episode I did with my mom. So thank you to all of you who have been sending kind words and advice. I've been forwarding these to my mom, and it is, when I talk to her on the phone, just, she's, I've never heard her this happy before. So thank you to all of you for whatever you've been doing to contribute to this podcast, and please keep listening. And if you like it, give us a rating on iTunes, because that has something to do with whatever their algorithm is that puts podcasts in an arbitrary order that allows us to feel some form of phantasmal accomplishment, which I love that feeling of phantasmal accomplishment. It's a great feeling. There are far worse feelings, that's for sure. Today's guest on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour is a favorite with you guys and a favorite with me too. He's just from this podcast, he's become a great friend of mine. And actually tonight we're going to hang out in Meet Space and not record the conversation for the first time ever. He is an author, and he doesn't like being called this, but he's a philosopher, whether he likes it or not. He is the host of a new podcast, the Drunken Taoist podcast. There'll be links to it on my website. And he's also a martial artist and an all-around amazing human being, and he's a dad. So everybody, please send your deepest, go into the base of your spine and grab that fucking kundalini snake coiled around your first chakra and rip that son of a bitch out and lob him through astral space like a goddamn frisbee so that he lands in the pineal gland of my sweet dear friend, the awesome, amazing, genius, super intelligent, badass motherfucker, Daniela Bolelli.
Try to avoid mentioning. So the hot chick you're trying
to... Oh, wait, it's recording. No, shut Daniela Bolelli, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. It's so nice to have you here.
Man, I'm so happy. Every time I get to come here, I feel like a kid in the candy store. I know it's going to be fun. I have no idea what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be fun. So.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way, man. I get really excited when you're coming over to do this because who the fuck knows what's going to happen in the conversation we're just having before this that we can't record. But it's, I have to tell you, getting advice about girls from a philosopher is awesome. It's so much better than getting advice about girls from ordinary people because it's just good. You're totally right. Man, girls.
Yeah.
Girls.
That's what life is all about.
But it's so odd. Isn't it odd that like in outside, philosophers don't, they don't seem to focus on girls that much.
But that's why I hate philosophers.
Right.
You know, I hate, as usual, I hate people in most categories because the average is pretty damn low. But
yeah.
Then that's why, you know, when you read the average philosophy book, it's like, man, get out more often.
Yeah.
Go to the beach, catch some sun. You know, these are people who, precisely because I love philosophy, I think some of the typical philosophers think too damn hard and don't live enough.
Yeah.
It's like, seriously, that's what it's about. It's about hot woman walking by you. That's life right there.
Yes.
Some abstract metaphysical crap. Come on.
You know? Right. Right. It's the same thing when the Jesus never hooked up with a girl.
Yeah.
Like, that's... there should be an entire gospel of fucking, right? Why is that not there?
The gospel of fucking. I'm down. let's write it. We should, you know, if it's missing, we should fill in the blanks.
It's so strange, isn't it? It's like this, why is that not, and there's in the Bible.
Right.
There is the Song of, what's it, the Song of Solomon?
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
That's like a kind of like poetic hooking up.
Porn, right.
Porn. It's like biblical porn. Yep. But then we hit the New Testament, and it's just a...
Nothing.
Sausage fest.
Absolutely.
The New Testament is a sausage fest.
Yeah.
You've got Mary, who doesn't fuck...
Right.
And gets it. Well, no, I guess God humps her.
Isn't it right?
They're kind of ambiguous about it, but like God humps her.
Somehow he managed, right?
And then that creates this weird alien spawn creature that proceeds to exist for how many years before he got nailed?
30-some.
34 or something, 35 years.
Right.
37, 35.
Nobody knows.
Right. He's 35 and he's never fucked.
Yeah, I mean, that's shady on so many levels. First, it just pissed me off. It's like, if I knew nothing else about Christianity, just that alone would bug me.
Yes.
I'd be like, okay, that's a deal breaker right there.
Yes.
On top of it, I mean, it's fun. Even like the whole virgin birth story is like, yeah, two of the gospels report it as miracle, the virgin birth, all that. And two others decide it's not an important fact enough to mention. It's like, right, are you kidding me? It's like, you don't. So, I mean, some of these things is who the hell knows what's real and what's not. I mean, when you think about it, the whole Jesus story, nobody knows that there's one shred of objective truth, sure, about it. Nobody knows. Could be all legend, could be all true. Nobody. But if you're going to craft a good legend, really, a dude who never touches a woman, or at
please,
least we never hear about it. Ooh.
Please.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Please. Like, because if I'm Christ's friend,
yeah,
I'm going to be hooking up with girls, and I'm going to want to talk about it with him because he's my friend.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to keep it from him. And also, I'm going to think it's weird he's not fucking. Like, all
so
of his
too,
friends are going to want to bring it up in, like, kind of casual ways. Or, you know, they're going to try to set him up with girls. But it's like, yeah, man, if you can walk on water, do you realize what you could do in bed? If you can fucking walk on water, think of what...
300 screaming orgasms back to back to back to back to back.
It's, yeah, 300 like a orgasm strobe light.
Yeah, or like Krishna who splits himself in 10,000
yes,
bodies to have sex with 10,000 different women at the same time.
Right.
Now, that's a god.
That is a god.
Yep.
That's a god. And that's a beautiful thing because in that situation, you don't create a religion that becomes incredibly sexually repressive.
Right.
You create a religion where it's like, yeah, if God is fucking... If God is so horny that he's splitting himself into 100 different bodies, for those of you who don't know, this is the story of what's called the, what is that called? The Rasalila, is that the name of it? It's a, it's the idea is that, of course, the whole thing's just a big metaphor, but the idea is that Krishna is out in the forest playing his flute, and all the gopis is what they're called, the cowherd girls who are hanging out with their husbands and their family and their babies. They leave in the night to go and dance, and I think it's called the Rasalila, to go and dance with Krishna, who is the embodiment of pure pleasure and absolute potency. And so Krishna splits himself into 100 different forms to make love with all these beautiful women, and they're married, they've left their lanterns burning, and the whole thing is supposed to represent, well, I mean, aside from the idea of like how great it would be to have sex with God, it's supposed to represent the spiritual call,
right?
Which is like when you really hear it, you're like, what the fuck was I thinking with this dumb life? Am I really going to be in this stupid existence when there's this beautiful wild force in the metaphysical forest of existence that I can go and hump?
But what cracks me up about the stories is people always, when they are repressed, they try to present it purely as, no, this is strictly a metaphor.
Yes.
It's nothing to do with real sex. Yeah. Same thing about the Song of Solomon. They say it's really a metaphor about Jesus and the church, the love between the church and Jesus. And it's like, the whole Song of Solomon is like vivid description of boobs and grabbing everybody part and just fluids coming out of everywhere. It's like, really, that's just a metaphor, right?
Yeah.
It's like watching porn and saying, you know, that really is about the union of with the divine. It's like, come on, man. It's like, I mean, yeah, if you want to see it that way, but it's also good porn.
It's so creepy. God, you'd be hanging out with a real creep if he was like watching porn. He's like, I do not watch this for the fucking. I watch it because it represents merging with the transcendent form.
That's exactly. Yeah. I'm like, when I read that stuff, I'm like, come on, man. Really, the union of the soul and the divine. Yeah, I mean,
give me a fucking break.
Yeah,
this has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
It's good, but it's a, you know, it's a. But the end result of this is it's created a super repressed society. Like we're
absolutely.
In. That's why when you look at like Romney or you look at his running mate, they seem really repressed.
Of course.
They seem like they're fucking like so repressed that they like when they work out together, they probably jerk each other off or something. like where it's gotten that bad and they have a reason for doing it. Definitely Paul Ryan reminds me of somebody who...
Scary motherfucker.
Scary.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what this guy is. People who have awesome sex on a regular basis, they're going to be happy. They're going to have a good vibe.
Yes.
They're going to be sweet to other human beings.
Yes.
When you don't, that's when all sort of crap start coming up and you get repressed and you get weird and you get hateful and you get... Yeah. If you are busy having awesome orgasm on a regular basis, you're not going to be this repressed, mean asshole who pass on bad vibes to everyone else.
Right.
That's where it's at.
It's hard.
In more ways than one.
But yeah, man! No, but it is hard. Like, the next day after you've had good sex, it's... You could pretty much... Like, a giant... bird could shit on you and you wouldn't care.
Doesn't matter, exactly.
Yeah, you just feel better.
There's my all-time hero, this Japanese Zen monk from the 1400s, Ikkyu, has this one line that I thought was beautiful. As an haiku, he writes, sitting around chanting sutras, that's crap. Getting laid, that's great wisdom. And his whole thing is like half of his poems are about... being around these damn monks who all they do is chant and pray. God damn, I'm so tired. If somebody's looking for me, I'm either at the sake shop or at the local brothel. But he has all these...
Who is this? What's his name?
Ikkyu. I-K-K-Y-U.
Wow.
He's one of my all-time gods. You know the writer Tom Robbins?
Yes.
Yeah, I got him through Tom Robbins because I love Tom Robbins' writing. I find it amazing. And he... And I love Zen, and he brought up Ikkyu as his all-time hero. I'm like, God damn, I have to check out this guy. And I went to look into him. Man, like the wildest story that I've ever read of anybody. The guy was like the legitimate son of the emperor of Japan. They were about to chop his head off to avoid, for palace conspiracy and all of that. His mom put him in a Zen monastery when he's 5. Grew up in this very severe, tough environment. Absolute genius, and precisely because he's an absolute genius, hates the Zen establishment because you feel like, you know, motherfuckers are just a bunch of posers. You know, you pretend you speak Zen, you only have the outside trapping of it all.
Yeah.
When they give him a certificate of enlightenment, he promptly burns it, saying, come on, man, certificate of enlightenment, what the fuck are we talking about here?
Yeah.
And the rest of his life, he goes off becoming these wandering teachers. And his main passions will be drinking sake, having sex with every woman in a 10-mile radius that is gentle enough to share herself with him.
Yes.
And Zen. And to him, the three are all the same. You know, it's awesome. When he's really old, he's close to dying, he tells some of his guys, he says, some of you, when I die, some of you guys are going to take to the mountains and meditate in the forest. That's fine. Some of you guys will go off and just chase women. Both types of Zen are fine with me.
Wow!
But if you become a professional cleric and start blabbing about Zen as the way, then you're my enemy.
Wow. I love that so much.
That's my guy.
He's like Zen Jesus because the real Jesus, that's the idea of Jesus, is the same reaction to a kind of dogmatic system of behavior that had lost the connection of that spontaneous burst of life that's happening all around us. It had like completely so that's, and they were so mad, it was stupid shit. Like he was like in the wheat fields, right? On the Sabbath, picking wheat, and they're like, "That's work. You can't do that."
I know. It's like that's when you don't have enough good sex.
Yeah,
you start obsessing with stupid rules, with stuff that mean nothing. And that's part of why I dig Ikkyu, is because the opposite of that is his thing, beside the obvious fun of it all, is the elimination of the separation between sacred and profane.
Yeah.
Arguing that the sacred is right here, right? It's a state of being, you know, it's a state of consciousness. It's daily life, live with full awareness.
Yes.
That's where the sacred is. Not just being in a... I mean, being in a monastery up in the Malaya is cool too, but it's not just about, that's not just the only type of spirituality.
You know who else reminds me of this is Bukowski. Mm-hmm. He's living in this depraved existence, but his poetry that's coming out of it is beautiful, and articulating this kind of light that shines through moments of humanness.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And when you're, and that's why the profane, as they call it, that's the totally the wrong word for it.
Right.
Because when you're in the midst of something that is allegedly profane or diabolic or immoral, according to a great many people on earth, you inevitably feel this light coming out of it that where suddenly you realize, oh shit, this is not bad at all.
Right.
This is no more bad than this is identical to going to a mass at a church, or you see the same light flickering through everything.
As EQ would put it, a single night of love is better than 1,000 years of sterile meditation.
Wow, that's so cool, because it's inviting you to live.
Yeah, exactly.
It's inviting you to live.
Yeah.
And that's why so many people don't like meditation, and so many people are, when they hear the word meditation, they get put off by it, because
right.
they think, oh, fuck that.
Right.
That sounds so boring and dumb, and you just sit still, and what's the point?
And I mean, the guy is also playing, because he did meditate and
sure.
he was part of his practice and all of that. But the point is, meditation as an extension of living versus meditation as, I'm going to meditate now. I'm going to switch to my spiritual state. He's like, come on, you're missing the point.
Right.
You do it that way. And and to me, a lot of it boils down to what's in your head. Because I mean, even sex, you know, there are going to be a lot of people who have a ton of sex on a regular basis, and it's ugly. You know, there's
yes.
nothing, there's the energy there is, the action is there, the energy is.
But they're getting shit out of it.
Yeah,
they're not
exactly.
getting anything out of it.
Yep.
I know exactly what you're talking, and this is where it gets tricky, because people will hear these kinds of conversations read these types of philosophies, and then they'll begin to think, oh, I can just go be like an alcoholic sex addict
right.
in the world and I'm meditating. But it's like no.
Point, right.
In the same way, like people will read Bukowski and they'll think, I can just be a terrible gutter drunk and be like him. But it's like, no. He was fucking working at the post office. He was working long hours, and he was writing
right.
for hours a day. He had the discipline. He had the balance. It's that fucking balance, man. Because if you meditate every day and you don't go out at night, well, that's pretty easy. And if you go out at night all the time and don't meditate in the day, well, that's pretty fucking easy too.
Right.
If you combine the two, what is that?
Yeah,
whoa.
That's where it gets interesting. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's where it gets fucking interesting, man. Yeah.
To me, it's funny about this stuff, because sometimes when people are... I can hear the same message from different people, and I agree with one guy and I disagree with the other.
Yeah.
Not because the message is the same, but the energy behind it, the vibe behind it, the consciousness behind it is different,
right?
And that's why it sounds totally contradictory, because it's like, hey man, you know, you're either what the fuck are you talking about? Why do you agree with this guy who's saying the same thing as the other guy, and
right.
you have an issue? And it's what's behind it, what's behind the words, what's behind all of it. And
yes, that
or that's my excuse for being a judgmental asshole who likes some people and doesn't like others. I don't know.
No, man. I don't think. I think that there's just, you know, you. It's like you're at a costume party and there's people in a costume, and then there's real monsters, and the difference between the two is really easy to tell. You know, in the same way, you with this kind of stuff, you'll mm-hmm. inevitably run into people who think that they really believe that there's some kind of like authoritative like expert on
right.
in the world of the spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they always have this heaviness to them, and this fucking and this heavy like tyrannical approach to it, where they're creating these systems and they've put themselves at the top of the thing, and then and they hate people like us.
Yep, absolutely.
They hate us. It's the worst when people are like, when you're just like, no, man, I'm not going to fucking create a spiritual hierarchy because you sit on your fucking ass and stare at a wall 12 hours a day
yeah.
for months at a time. Who gives a fuck?
Absolutely.
You're obviously miserable yeah. and paranoid.
And anybody who's going to create a spiritual hierarchy, I just want to punch them in the face right off the bat. It's like, anytime when people start a conversation with, Master so-and-so. He's like, okay, let me slap you right away. He's like, I don't even know the guy, and it's already bad. It's,
my guru.
Yeah, it's like, come on.
Let me tell you of my guru. Yeah. Ooh, and they always say, I get videos sent sometimes from people who want to show me their goddamn guru. And it's like this inevitably a guy with like milky eyes and like just like saying nothing.
Right.
And then you read the descriptions of their guru and like they'll like break down like when he like I've seen videos of this one particular guy and it's just videos of him like staring. And then they'll say the most obvious thing, like long periods of staring followed by like, we are all one. You know, like, this is fucking shit.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, see, anyone could say any. It's an outfit.
Yep.
You know, you wear a costume and dopes will believe in you.
And that's precisely the EQ versus Zen establishment. You know, they're both Zen. Why is he mad with these guys? It's because they are taking something that could and should be amazing and perverting it into some weird, stupid game that lost all of its life behind it.
Yeah.
And I got the same thing in all fields. Like, sometimes when I'm teaching classes, I had to co-teach classes with other people in college. First day of classes, I see these guys who start, my name is Dr. Right there, word number 5, I'm already going, okay, you're an asshole, and nothing you're going to teach this semester is going to be any good.
Yeah.
Your name is not Dr. anything, you dumbass. Your name is Joe, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
You know, it's like already putting up this, I'm Dr. so-and-so.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I'm master, I'm guru. It's like,
master. What are the different words? The different, there's master, there's, oh, the head of the Hare Krishnas. His divine grace.
Yeah.
A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Divine grace.
I got to start using that too. From now on, I'm going to be seriously pissed if people don't refer to me as his divine grace, Daniele Boulay. What the fuck?
I love it. Yeah. I'll call you his divine grace, and I wouldn't mind it at all. Yeah, it's a funny thing, man. You just can't tell people to call you his divine grace. You can't, because it has to be a spontaneous thing, I suppose. And anyone who really is his divine grace, the moment someone calls him that, is going to be like, shut laugh. Up,
yes.
you yep. idiot.
Of course.
But it is a fascinating thing because it's really important to realize just how dangerous these people are. Yep. Because it's not like, I mean, we're making fun of them, but they spin webs that steal people's lives forever. Like, people get stuck on these stupid webs, and they're not living their life at all, and they're pretending that they are, but you know what? Those people are weak.
Yeah, and I mean, some people, in some cases, it works for people. You know what I mean? I may think it's crap, but for some people, it's what they need, and it works for them. And I mean, who the fuck am I to judge? It's just like, I can look at it and think, what the that's so weird, that just seemed like a loser choice. But at the same time, it's like, hey, man, if it makes you happy and it improves the quality of your life in some way, it's not my life, good for you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, from my point of view, I look at the damage done as well, not just the people who I may disagree, but they get something out of it. I look at the damage done sometime by all the spiritual game in terms of people, you know, using it essentially to use people.
Yeah.
Get something out of them. I mean, I actually had fun in the 50 Things You're Not Supposed to Know About Religion book. One of the chapters I put is almost an how-to about how to create a cult to extract sex and money from your followers.
Ah.
And I have a blueprint for this is what you need to do to make sure to do that.
But yes. Yeah, and it's really easy. I mean, really, you know, if you want to know how to start a cult, here's what you do. Go to a kid's party and study the person that they paid to dress like a fairy and watch the way kids are acting around this clear fraud, because the kids will just decide to believe it's a fairy because it's fun for them that day. But even in the back of their heads, they got to know that is not a fucking fairy.
Right.
That's a stripper who's like moonlights. Is it? She's like throws some body glitter on her face and puts on a leotard and makes like $60 at kids' parties giving out stickers.
Right.
But they're like, oh, a real fairy. In the same way, the adult version of that is these motherfuckers throw on a goddamn robe, smack on a fucking like silly outfit, and then go parading around dumbasses. And then the dumbasses are having the kids' party reaction to like, he's a messenger of God.
Just the words alone.
Oh my God, man. My mom was telling me about this fucking guy. Like, I can't remember who it was, but oh man, like you just hear this shit where like people decide like I am an intuitive empath and I am channeling an interdimensional spirit who wants me to charge $100 a healing session. Yeah. Oh!
But it's not about the money. It's because unless people pay, they don't appreciate the beauty of the message.
Yes.
So it's really, you should give me all your money, but not because I'm greedy. It's because it's for you, really.
I don't want the money.
It's doing you some good, giving me your money.
I could, listen, I live off sunlight. I could give a fuck about this ridiculous money. This is just, yeah, so what you end up getting in this, in where we're getting here, is this is spiritual capitalism. Yeah. So there it becomes this bizarre metaphysical economy that starts springing up it's like they've identified these kinds of strange inner workings of the universe that are based in like, yeah, if you give me $100, this is in some way getting registered in some transcendent universal karma bank that makes you more receptive to my message.
Yeah, there's that, which is beautiful, right? It's like the most weird, the weirdest bullshit ever, and people buy it.
Yes.
And there's, it's the same thing as like the Catholic Church, you know, give us your money and we'll, the indulgences, you know, give us your money and we'll take some time of purgatory for you or for your dead relatives. We'll pray for them. We'll put a good word with God, and that way we'll speed the process of getting into heaven. You skip the line. You know, we know the people at the door. You skip the line.
Sure.
It's the same shit.
Yeah. You could. There was a time, right? You could just buy an indulgence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for the rest of your life, you could just be, you could be fisting nuns. You could be you could be going through forests, killing every cute animal, burning huts down.
Yep.
Dragging people through the mud in the back of your horse, dressed like a black knight, and you are going to heaven no matter what.
Of course, of course.
The Catholic Church.
Yep.
Victory. The Catholic Church is the Walmart of religion, right? It's like...
It's unbelievable. The fact that it still exists today, Jesus Christ. I mean, I don't get it. It's all... I mean, there's such a shitty history behind it on every level, from Inquisitions to witch hunts to Crusades to... sale of indulgences to every, you know, the fact that you couldn't fucking read the Bible on penalty of death in Christian Europe because only we have the monopoly over it and we'll tell you how to read it. Otherwise, you'll get it wrong and you'll create heresies.
Yeah.
I mean, how much worse than that does it get, you know?
Well, if you eat mushrooms, you can go to jail. I mean, that's the modern day version of it. It's like, it's still the same idea, which is like access to certain information fields is an offense or a crime that people need to get protected from this information. Like, but now what they say is like, they don't even explain it. I mean, like no one even, you never hear like, here's why mushrooms are illegal.
Right.
You never even hear that. No one even explains like, oh, you know, mushrooms are illegal because they'll drive you mad. Destroy brain cells. Yeah. But the reality is, you would have to eat a garbage bag of mushrooms to OD. So
basically,
but it is funny how these like, you almost like there's, this is something I think about all the time, is like, is the Catholic Church, or any kind of power structure limiting information to the people, is that a abomination, a kind of mutation, a cancer extruding from history, or is there just some weird innate structure that exists within human society that manifests in the form of oppressive power systems designed to keep people away from information? Because the exact same shit's happening now in a different way.
Yeah. My guess is both. There's probably, I mean, the fact that this dogma spouting, dogma defending and crashing alternative worldviews, institutions exist is because people dig them. You know, it's not just some evil conspiracies. Lots of people dig this stuff because it makes them feel safe. It reassures them. It gives them answer. It does all of this stuff, you know. And that's part of it. And then there are people who will run with it because there's power. There's power that can be used in a lot of ways to essentially money, you know, extract the goods out of people and get what you want.
It's lucrative.
Yeah, totally.
It's definitely a lucrative thing to start a church.
Yeah.
And it's fun to drive by churches and stop looking at them. Like, because for the longest time when I was a kid, you drive by a church and you're like, that is a good place. Right. But now when you drive by and you realize that's a business.
As Bob Marley put it, don't you feel like bombing a church now that you know that the preacher is lying?
What did he say?
Bob Marley.
He said that again?
There's a song in which he said, don't you feel like bombing a church now that you know that the preacher is lying?
Wow. Right. When you realize that when you pass a church, what that is no different from a Venus flytrap, where in the middle of that church is a guy who wears funny clothes and says he represents God or has some kind of like expertise in articulating the scriptures that he's reading, and a flock. It's called his flock.
I know. It's like, I am one of the flock. Who the fuck says that, you know?
Yeah. He's like a shepherd and like sheep. It's like a sheep herder.
I know.
So a church gets filled with these fucking people who, now look, here's the crazy thing about this. This is where it gets really shitty, is there are good churches.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There are good communities. Yeah. There are good organizations where it's not a cult of personality.
No, I agree.
But I bet those are going to be a little less flashy than the other ones. You know, the mega churches. Have you seen? I mean, I love watching mega churches.
Fuck, I've wanted to do that forever. I should really present my alter ego, start a mega church, get all the followers.
Yeah.
I don't know, just for fun. That would be enjoyable. It's like evil personified. You know what I mean? It's like that shit is just disturbing on so many levels.
I mean, these are fucking the Colosseums. Filled with people, and in the center of it is this one dude. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. He's got like kind of a hot wife. I can't remember his name though, but there's a really famous mega church pastor right now. But here's where it gets awesome. That fucking thing is not getting taxed.
Yeah, that's right. That's
they don't get taxed.
Yep. Yeah.
They don't get taxed. They've like risen above society to the point where not only are they like, do they have this incredibly lucrative fucking business that's it's a show.
Right.
Right. When you go to church, you're basically going to see a show.
Absolutely.
And the show doesn't charge tickets.
Right.
But the show tells a story about how if you pay money after the show, then you get some kind of like reward from paying.
Absolutely.
Tithing.
Yeah.
That's what they tell you.
God
they
will love you.
Right. They tell you to tithe.
Yeah.
And they tell you how to tithe because I believe in tithing. I just don't believe in doing it to a church.
Right.
I think if you cut 10% of your income and decide you're just going to use that to give to your friends to like have fun, pay for some fucking hand job massages for your friends, whatever some random chaos, you use 10% of your income to bring random financial chaos into your friends' lives. But
true philanthropist. And by the way, I would like to remind you that I am your friend. So in case you're really
you better watch out. You better watch out, Daniela.
As you really feel the need, but
you might end up on my tithing list.
Good.
And you don't know what could happen. But that's fun.
Mushrooms and hookers. Good to know.
But man, when you imagine it, when you just stop and think like, okay, 10% of my money a year, whatever that is.
Right.
And then you imagine like how fun it is to think, I'm going to take 10% of that dough and I'm going to use it to buy remote control drones for my friends. I'm going to use it to take my friends out to eat. I'm going to use it to get my friends drunk. I'm going to use it to send weird shit to my nephew. I'm going to use it just for chaos and fun in the spirit of giving.
Yep.
Suddenly, goddamn, that's fun.
Yep.
You've given your permission to have a blast. But when you think, I'm going to take 10% of my money and give it to the church every year and let them use it for missionary trips to Africa. Oh,
And the pastor's Rolls Royce, but yeah.
Oh, that too. Yeah. To pay for that motherfucker's suits and to pay for the teams of private investigators he has to have to find out what the different people in his fucking flock are up to. They do that.
Of course.
They like, it's really weird.
Yeah. It is.
And also lawyers, of course, to pay for the fucking lawyers to deal with the fact that inevitably they're like sucking off choir boys or whatever. It's
That's always sweet, right?
It's always an inevitability.
Yeah, no,
it always comes up.
Yeah, it does. And I think back to kind of where we started on that is the more you repress sex, the more is going to come out in the nastiest, weirdest ways.
Yes.
It's like the reason why, you know, look at our San Fernando Valley, world capital of porn. So you have that on one level. But then if a woman goes topless on a beach on a hot day, she gets arrested for indecent exposure.
Yes.
It's like, what the fuck is up with that? Talk about like some schizoid standards that exist out there. And you ever play video games?
Yeah.
You know how in video games, if you show like the most extreme violence, you get your PG-13 kind of rating.
Yeah.
But if you show the most mellow game in the world, if you show any type of nudity,
forget it.
That automatically you get the highest possible restriction, which is like, which one would you rather see coming at you in a dark alley? A machine gun wielding ninja or boobs?
Boobs.
What's scarier?
Clearly boobs.
You know, it's like, are you kidding me? That's what's supposed to mess up the minds of kids?
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Give me a fucking break, man. Give me a fucking break.
Yep.
See, this is the perversion of our species. This is why our species is one of the most depraved, fucked up, freakish species on Earth. Because if you also, like, if I send a friend of mine, if I was to send a friend like a picture of a guy blowing his head off with like a firework that malfunctioned just to disturb him that day,
right.
My friend would be like, all right, whatever, you're a dick. I wish I hadn't seen that. But if I sent my friend like, dude, check out this fucking blowjob scene, I'd be like, why are you sending me porn, man? Don't send me that.
Again, I would like to remind you, as a friend, I will never react that way. By all means, feel free to share.
It's so fucking weird though, man. It's like this type of conversation, people, when they hear it, we sound like monsters. Like if someone in a fundamentalist Christian upbringing heard this, that we would sound like slavering demons, like doing a podcast from the lower pits of hell.
It's not where we're at right now.
No, it would be kind of cool. That'd be an awesome podcast. Somebody needs to do that—a demon podcast.
The demon podcast, right? No, but I mean, that's the thing that pissed me off is that this monopoly over spirituality is actually the opposite. The people posing as this spiritual play, that to me is where evil is at.
Yeah.
Evil is not in acknowledging, because I mean, at the end of the day, it boils down to when you walk out the door, how do you relate to other human beings?
Yes.
I don't care about what people say, what theology they espouse, what church they go to or they don't go to. I don't even judge it that way. I don't care. You know, it works for you. You go to church seven days a week at the weird church that I don't like. Who cares? I want to see how you act.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that matters to me. How you relate to other human beings. Then if you are a sweet, nice person who, as you put it last time, brings strawberry to your neighbors, then I don't need to agree with your theology.
Right.
Whatever you're doing is good.
Yeah.
It's working for you.
Yeah.
You know? So that to me what it boils down to. It's all the theory in the world. It's only interesting in the measure that it leads to action.
Yeah.
And what kind of action is that?
Yes. Yeah, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita which says, I can't remember exactly how it goes. It's really cool though. Many people get attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, is what it says. The flowery words of scripture. You get attached to this kind of like the beauty of like the verses, but then you totally, that's as far as you go with it. Where every single day you get an opportunity to do a real sacrifice, and the sacrifice is a sacrifice a sacrifice doesn't mean you're sacrificing, like you're giving some, doesn't mean that you have to give up something you love. It means you can give up fear. Every day you've got that, you get this amazing chance to give up fear. You get this incredible chance to sacrifice fear and on the altar of action, and that fucking action can be ask the girl for her phone number. You know, do the thing that makes your pulse go up. Do the thing that makes your heart flutter. Do that thing. That's living.
Tell her you like her.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And you know what? You'll know that you are knocking on the door of novelty when you feel that thing surge in your heart. Where you're like, oh, fuck, I can't do this. I don't know. I'm not going to do it. That's where you need to be.
Absolutely.
That's the place to exist. Because whether on the other side of that door is a gaping embarrassment, or whether on the other side of the door is the most incredible sex of your life,
right,
you're still a million times better off.
You did it. That itself is awesome.
That's
you
all that matters.
You went for it, and there's no way to ensure results.
Yeah.
You know, it could go, as you say, horrendously bad. It could go awesome. But the fact that you took the step, that's great in itself.
That's the move.
Yep.
Oh, the move.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love that, man. And this is where these motherfucking God clowns teach people to go against that feeling. Play it safe. Don't feel that rush of the pulse. Don't feel that exhilaration that is the source of all happiness. Live in some static, boring, monotonous, ordered life and pretend to be happy.
That's what being saintly is all about, to try to stay away from life, really, to stay away from anything that has a pulse that's scary, that goes boom during the night, that, you know, all of the stuff that makes life interesting, passion, you know, that's what is dangerous and you need to stay away from and all of that. And he's like, again, thank you, EQ, tell them all to fuck off.
Yeah.
Because that's the opposite of spirituality in my mind. That's really like what you're saying. That's spirituality, taking that plunge. That's what it is.
And it's not comfortable.
No, not at all.
It's not like the taking those plunges. If it was comfortable, it wouldn't mean anything. This is the leap of faith.
Yep.
When people hear the leap of faith, when I was growing up and heard the leap of faith, yawn city. Like when you consider that, it's like, oh God, great, faith. Is there anything more boring than faith when you're a kid?
No.
When someone starts yapping about fucking faith, just blow your head. Shut up about faith, faith, faith.
Yeah.
But then when you start understanding what faith is, that idea of like, no, you are held up by this this incredible harmonious universe, and that you're going to be fine no matter what.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean you're going to stay alive.
No.
When we say you're going to be fine, that doesn't mean that you're not necessarily going to end up, because of your leap of faith, going to end up splattering all over the fucking sidewalk or ending up in some really, really like sticky predicament. But what it means is that ultimately, it's this decision that it's a decision you make.
Right.
Isn't it a kind of, what do they call it? What do they call talk about the apocalypse? Eschatological, is that the word for it?
Yeah.
It's an eschatological decision where you've decided that no matter what's happening in the temporary flow of the phenomena that makes up your life, at the end of the river of time, there is going to be an incredible orgasm of perfection, and you're part of the matter that's going to be part of that orgasm, so you might as well move in the direction of the light, right? That's faith, right?
Yeah. I like your definition of faith is by far the best I've ever heard.
Thanks. Yeah, man. And that, God damn it, means that when you go knocking on these fucking doors, you have this sense inside of you that, look, man, it's just going to work out.
Right. And because it independent of a result. The result you can control. Nothing in life you control the outcome. What you control is you in that sense. Whether you go for it or not, whether you take the and it's exhilarating. I mean, it's scary as hell, but when you get over the fear, there's a moment of exhilaration of like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm gonna do it. Let's go for it. And anything can happen. There's no way to know what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And that feeling itself that anything can happen is what makes you feel alive.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And you can be certain that one thing you're gonna get in the other side of that door is truth.
Yep.
And it's going to be truth one way or the other, but it's definitely going to be truth about the way things really are.
Yep.
You know, when you go to try to kiss the girl, one way or the other, you are going to have an answer to the burning question inside of you as to whether or not this human has some attraction for you.
I see that's on your mind a little bit, huh?
Nah, man.
Just fucking with you.
No, man. I'm... I don't I'm celibate.
That's right.
I'm
we are saying, right?
Yeah, I'm just talking about like as a metaphor. When
I say
kiss a girl, I'm talking about the not push, not finally tasting her beautiful, delicious lips and smelling her hair and feeling her close to you. I'm talking about kissing Jesus.
That's right. Kissing Jesus. That's precisely what we are saying.
Just finally getting your lips against his old cracked desert lips and tasting the gross miracle fish stuck in his molars. His disgusting
miracle fish. Yes.
Desert fish breath.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Old wine and fish and bits of wood. Yeah.
So no, not about girls. That's not what we're talking about. Oh, we're talking about
talking about girls in high school. The thing is, it's like once you start, you got to start where you're at, and a great way to overcome fear is to start with girls, if you're a guy, or if you're a girl, you know. And for the girls listening, sorry, I didn't mean to make this like a misogynistic gender-based thing. I'm just speaking from my own personal experience. For girls, it's the same fucking thing, man. Go for it. Like, girls are, it's sad because girls get trapped in a they get like a guy's expected to go for it with a girl. A girl has this extra guilt if she goes for it with a guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, the amount of bullshit that has been put on women's sexuality throughout history in most parts of the world is downright. It's so it's one of the most fucked up things ever done in human history. I mean, it's like the amount of repression that exists for everybody, men and women, but particularly women.
Yeah.
Man, I'm just, it really amazes me. And it pisses me off to no end when you hear all the like all the people who reinforce that sense of shame over going for it, or you're expected then if you do go for it, which is already like this dangerous thing that only men should do, what the hell are you doing? You're acting like a man. Then if it doesn't work, triple shame because, you know, you're supposed to be pursued. What are you doing pursuing somebody? It's like, oh man, that just, it just make me shudder. You know, all of that stuff is, and by the way, I'm saying that so that women will find me sweet and lovable and think that
and
I'm
try to kiss you.
Exactly. So, you know.
Ladies.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Go for it. Just do it. Everyone should just be going for it. These goddamn formalities are just ruining everything. There's so many things. The it's interesting. It's like there does seem to be built into the universe, I think Joseph Campbell calls them portal guardians. It's like the embodiment of resistance inevitably appears in the form of dumb rules, or sometimes a person.
Right.
Sometimes a person will try to get in between you and someone else, or in between you and some success. Usually, it's a person. A portal guardian pops up, but it's very strange how guarding the nipples of the universe are inevitably these fucking these demonic forces that try to get between you and this sweet, beautiful, pink, juicy, delicious, life-filled nipples of God. Ah, the nipples of Jesus.
Again, purely a metaphor.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like a woman's nipples. I'm talking about suckling at the nipples of Jesus. I'm talking about finally wrapping your lips around his chafed, chapped, BO-covered, filthy desert nipples. Finally getting your lips around those thick, pear-like Christ nobules. Taking a big suck. God, what do you think would come out of Christ's nipples?
Oh, God.
No one ever milked Christ. Can you imagine if you could capture Christ, breed Jesus's, and milk Jesus' milk?
Hawaiian villas, here we come. We would be living large. And
this is so rich.
But yeah, if you go by the Gospels and what it said about it, you probably would suck up a monstrous amount of sense of guilt. And there would be a heavy level of repression, insecurity.
Jesus's nipples are filled with guilt. That's it. Just thick, briny Christ guilt. I don't think so, man. I think the nipples of Christ, I think Jesus would let, I think the real Jesus
right.
would let anyone suck on his nipples in a second. Just like, fine. I don't care if it makes you happy.
And sweet ecstasy would flow and you would never listen to another church again.
Yeah. You would never listen to any other religion. What's the thing with turn the other cheek? What's before that?
Oh, if somebody strikes you on the left cheek, you should turn the right.
If someone slaps you, put your nipple in their mouth. That's the real gospel.
That's some power there. You know what? Beside the rewriting the Gita, you should also rewrite the Gospels. I think
we got to go through and rewrite these things.
Absolutely.
We got to upgrade this shit. Upgrade the operating system.
Yep.
We got to do that. This old archaic shit, man. It's fucking up everything. Old dusty, old mothball covered scriptures. They got to get rewritten.
Gospels 2.0.
Yeah. It's time to upgrade. This is Internet Explorer. A lot of the Gospels are We got to get to Chrome.
Yep.
Google Chrome, the goddamn Gospels. Man, fuck. So it seems like what's coming out of this conversation is an assignment for the people listening for this week. So what's your assignment for the people listening?
Actually, I have one, but that's slightly off from our conversation right now. But it's actually goes back to stuff we were talking about before when we're talking about fear and talking about one thing that I can't believe in all the discussions we had about fear, even in previous podcasts, I never clicked in my mind at the time was because you mentioned, you know, how do you defeat certain fears? How do you defeat heavy depression? How do you defeat all those emotions that are dragging you down and just sucking the life out of you and not in a good way. And one thing that I realize is that the only thing that sometimes has allowed me to get over some of those emotions has been love for somebody else, not for myself.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes when you're terrorized by something, it's like you're just terrorized. There's nothing, you know, no amount of rationality, no message, no self-motivation, no ego is going to get you over it. At least not for me a lot of the time.
Yes.
But suddenly, if I think that me not being able to get over this will hurt somebody else that I love, boom, now it's done.
Right.
It's the same thing as like the scariest image in the world, the scariest, whatever scares you the most. You want to be as far away from it as possible. But if you picture somebody you loved in the same place, you would just be diving right in to save them, quote unquote.
Yes.
It's weird. It's like we can do stuff for others that we can do for ourselves. So assignment number one would be pick one person, living, dead, doesn't matter. Somebody that you love a lot and you think that getting over your depression, getting over your fear, getting over your whatever the fact it is that's limiting you is something that they would be happy about. And probably they would, you know, because they love you and they care for you. So they them would be happy about if you could do it. So that's your job for the day.
There you go. That's a great. That's really fucking cool, man. And I like that it can be someone who's not alive now.
Of course,
it could be someone who exists back in the river of time. Who might have already passed on, but they're still around. If time's an illusion and everything's happening at once, they're just not at the particular sector of the universe you happen to be in.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I love it, man. That's good. That is some incredible advice, man. And now I'm going to give my assignment.
Please, go.
You got to kiss that, sweetie. If you've been putting it off, for those of you who have been putting it off, guy or gal, you got to go for it this week and do it for your dead grandmother or whoever. Because it would make your grandmother happy. You know it would make your deceased grandmother happy if you finally locked lips with that sweet, beautiful darling. Go for it.
Only issue is try not to think about your grandmother as you're sticking your tongue through that other person's lips, because that may spoil it a little bit.
And certainly don't tell them that you're kissing them for your dead grandmother. This is for my nana. Oh, yeah. Oh, Mima, this is for you. Man, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Always a fun.
Always a blast, man. And wait, let's talk about you have a podcast now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, The one and only Mr. Duncan Trussell came on as the first guest to the Drunken Taoist podcast.
Yeah.
iTunes, you can find it there. Duncan, hopefully we put the website for the podcast on on the show notes for today. So if you don't use iTunes, you can find it that way. They have it on Stitcher. They have, you know, there are 6 gazillion ways to listen.
Yes.
And, man, I'm first episode, we had a hell of a conversation.
It was a blast.
And it just released a couple of weeks ago, so you can still check that out. What I do is typically I'll do 2 episodes a month, where one is with a guest and one is a random solo rants.
So cool.
Solo rants come out on the 15th. Guest episode come out on the 1st. I'm scaringly organized, am I not?
You are amazingly organized. You got to do it once a week, though, man.
I know, that would be nice.
Bi-monthly doesn't work.
I literally, like, the 24 hours in a day are fighting against me, because I literally, something got to give, you know. It's like I either spend less time with my daughter, which is not really an option.
No, that's not good.
Do, you know, something that I'm doing for money that I can't really give up. So that's,
do it before you go to bed. You need a handout to, because you have to understand, man, I would listen to you doing rants for, I would love to have an easy, an ample supply of your rants. You should just make it easy for yourself. Like, have a handheld tape recorder or something where if you're taking a walk or if you're in the car, you can just do it. You don't have to make it some formal thing. I think people would be incredibly excited about just getting to listen to you. Just the thing that you were just talking about this Zen master that I've never heard of before. Just stuff like that would be incredible. And also the name is amazing. The Drunken Taoist. I love that so much.
Yeah, there's a long story behind it, but the short version is I like wine and I like Taoism, so that take care of the short version. The long version I'll give you another time.
When do we get to go drink wine together sometime? That would be
next
a dream
week.
Come true for
Let's
me.
Let's make it happen.
Let's next do week. It. There's a wine bar. I think it's an Italian wine bar right down. Have you ever been there? There's an Italian wine bar.
Let's go.
Okay, next week we're doing that. Maybe we'll figure out a way to record it too, because we can only have conversations that we record. That's kind of fucking weird.
It's like
our friendship has been recorded. Like, we've mostly only talked while recording our conversation.
I mean, 4 conversations, and all of them with a microphone in front of us, trying to see, oh, shit, I'm not talking into the microphone. Let's get it back up to my lips.
We got to fix that problem.
Next week. Make it happen.
Okay, cool. Absolutely. Man. Thank you so much for being on the show. Guys, I'm going to have links to Daniela's info at DuncanTrussell.com, links to his podcast, links to his Twitter account, etc. Okay, thanks, man. See
ya. Thank you so much.
Okay, this is Bob Marley singing Talkin' Blues. Love you guys.